And I'm Robin. Welcome to Eastlake Church. Good you're here. A great place for everyone to find and follow Jesus. And take your notes out. You want to grab those. We're in a series called Follow. And what we're talking about is having a relationship with Jesus. One of the ways to see it is to follow. Last week we had this analogy that Jesus used when he talked about what it was to have a relationship with him. He said it'd be like having a shepherd. So you'd have someone to follow. And at one point, we had this part of it where, the enemy of the sheep can't stand flies. They're a lot like the rest of us. Flies make life miserable. And so these flies are always around these sheep. They get in their ears and their eyes and up in their nose. And so flies, just like little tiny things, it's the little things in life that make us miserable. We drop our cell phone and it cracks, our computer crashes, the car makes a funny sound, and all of a sudden we, get a bill in the mail that we're not expecting. Just little things. The kids won't clean their room. A little argument turned into a big argument. Life was filled with flies. And the sheep have these flies, and they're around all the time. And what the shepherd would do is he would make this homemade medication and smear it onto the face of the sheep, and it would help the sheep with these flies. And part of it is in our life is realizing that Jesus isn't just here for the big things. He's just not here to guide us through the really, really big things in life. The small little flies in life, and we all have them, from bad hair days to where did this 5 pounds come from to, Jesus is there for that too. Just the flies, the annoying things. And as we follow him, if we follow him, he helps us with those type of things too. Now today we're going to talk about a group of people that are in a moment of decision, because when you follow Jesus, and we all want to, sometimes I forget to, or I'm not sure, or I maybe just have this moment of decision, where it's like I'm in the moment, and I know which way Jesus is going, I know that I want to follow him this way, but the question is, will I say yes to him? And we're given this moment of decision, and you can write it in your notes, it's the big idea, we're given a moment of decision. And today we're going to look at a group of people, a story in the Bible about a group of people that are in their moment of decision. Are they going to say yes to Jesus? And so let's look at this story. I'll read it. We'll make some comments as we go through it. Jesus and his disciples, those close to him, went on to the villages around Caesarea Philippi. On the way, he asked them, "Who do people say I am?" They replied, "Some say John the Baptist, others Elijah, and still others one of the prophets." So Jesus, with all of his homies, they're all together, and they're kind of traveling from village to village. And Jesus asks this very interesting question. He says, "Who do people say that I am?" And we all know that sometimes who I think I am is very different on how someone else sees me. I have a perspective of myself, and they have a completely different perspective. And so Jesus does something that, I don't know that a lot of us are willing to be this vulnerable. He says, "Well, who do people say that I am?" Like, he wants to be able to be certain he's on the same page with other people, and that's like a good note in relationships, just to be willing to be vulnerable and ask people from time to time, "Well, how do you see me?" So Jesus wants to be on the same, "Who do people say that I am?" Because he's concerned that there could be misunderstandings. Jesus is a person like everyone else. He says, who do people say that I am? And he finds out there's a huge misunderstanding. Some of the people think he's the reincarnation of his cousin. So, I mean, this is a misunderstanding. Jesus has a cousin, John the Baptist, who had said some things about a strong political leader. He got thrown into prison, and he's executed. And people see Jesus, and they think he's the reincarnation of his cousin, or the reincarnation of this, like, dead prophet that lived hundreds and hundreds of years ago. And you think, well, he's back, because that guy did miracles, so Jesus does miracles. So he's listening. He goes, "Whoa, we are definitely not on the same page. I mean, I'm God's son. I've come for these reasons. I'm not the reincarnation of anybody." And then some people think, "Have you ever heard someone say something about you and you thought, what? How could you think that about me? I mean, that is so far away from how I see myself." And Jesus must have been thinking, "What? My cousin? What are you thinking?" From time to time, it's really good to just, with people you love, you care about, just to ask the question, "How do you see me? You know, at work, how do you go to, what's your perspective on me?" So Jesus does that. He says, "What's the perspective?" And he finds out, whoa, this is like not even close. And so let's keep reading, because he's probably walking going, "Wow, I had no idea that we were so far away. We're not even nearly on the same page." No wonder we have conflicts. We're not even on the same page with who I am or who you think that I am. And so here he keeps going. Who do people say I am? But what about you, he asked those closest to him. What about you? Who do you say I am? And Peter answered, you're the Messiah. Messiah Christ means the same thing. Jesus Christ, that's not his last name. That's a title. So it's not, he's the Christ. He's the special one. So Peter says, you're the Messiah. And Jesus warned them not to tell anyone about him. So now, listen to this now. So they're all traveling together. I can't believe reincarnation of my cousin. Well, listen, ask the closest people, who do you say I am? Now, this is interesting at this point because sometimes the people that are closest to us, they know things about us. They see us certain ways that other people don't. And there's a lot of angry children now, adults, walking around because their parents put a show on every weekend. They could put a show on at church. They could put a show on for the neighbors. They put a show on at work. And so everybody sort of saw them a certain way. But the children are like, that's not who they are at home. And isn't it true the people close to us, they're the ones that really know us? And so Jesus says, how do you guys see me? How do you see? And Peter says this in such a great thing about Jesus. He says, well, you're the special one. You're the one that's come definitely from God. You are the special one we've all been waiting for. You're the Messiah. You're the Christ. And you know that? That's probably one of my greatest goals, that the people closest to me, my wife, my children, the people I work with, people that really know me would say the best things about me. Because you can get it all turned around. You can say, everybody at church thinks I'm awesome. And everybody, they all think I'm awesome. But the people closest, and man, it can really cause dysfunction in a family. The kids are saying, that's not who they are. They're just putting on a show every Sunday. But just the opposite for Jesus, the closest people say, you've got to be the special one. We're with you every single day. We know everything. You have to be the special one. So what would it be like if you asked the people right closest, maybe make a note in your program today, get the courage up and go to someone really close and say, oh, how do you see me? And so Jesus does that, and then he says something interesting, and this is really one of the reasons that I'm willing to trust Jesus. He says, don't tell anybody about it, and I'm sure that threw him for a loop. He's like, well, Jesus, I thought the whole point was to tell people about you. And Jesus says, don't tell anybody, and here's why, because he knows that they're not ready to hear it yet, and Jesus will never force anybody to do something that they're not ready to do. So he says, wow, you guys are getting it. You understand it. You have the faith. You're in the process of your relationship with me. You're ready to hear that I'm the Messiah, the special one, but everybody else isn't, so don't tell them. Here's why I can trust Jesus. He has perfect timing. He's like, don't tell them that yet because it's going to confuse them. They're not going to understand it. They're not ready to hear it yet. They're not in the process yet. So here's the thing. Jesus isn't going to force you to believe anything that you're not ready to believe. He's not going to force you to commit to anything that you're not ready to commit to. And he knows that. He says, don't tell everybody that yet. They're not ready. We're not. The timing isn't right. And I can follow Jesus because his timing is always right. And maybe you have been hurt in your life because someone forced you to do something before you were ready. Even in the midst of it, you were like, I don't want to do this. I'm not ready to do this. I don't want to be here right now. But they forced you. They manipulated you. They tricked you. And you found yourself, and Jesus isn't like that. He doesn't need that. He's like, they've got time. Don't go tell them that they are not ready to hear that. I don't want them to feel forced. So please know, one of the greatest things between a relationship and religion will force you. Jesus will not. And so the story goes on. He says that to him, and let's keep reading. He then began to teach them that the Son of Man must suffer many things. Isn't the Bible great? We're in a story right now. It's like a little part of the story. He then began to teach them that the Son of Man must suffer many things and be rejected by the elders and the chief priests and the teachers of the law, and that he must be killed, and after 3 days rise again. He spoke plainly about this. Circle that in your notes. He spoke plainly about this. He spoke plainly about this, and Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. And so now Jesus is going to create a moment. He creates a moment, and he's going to give everybody an opportunity. Listen to this now. He's going to give everybody an opportunity. He wants to prepare them for what lies ahead. He says, while we're on the topic, he goes, I want to prepare you for what is going to arrive in your life. And you might be in something right now in your life, and you're going through it, and you're thinking, why do I have to go through this right now? Could it be that Jesus is preparing you right now for something that will arrive in the future? It's coming towards you. It's on its way. It will be arriving in your life. And Jesus wants to prepare them. He starts to talk to them and says, I want you guys to be prepared for what's going to arrive in your life. Here's what lies ahead for you. And Peter doesn't want to hear it. And you may have caught a glimpse of God's future for you, and you don't want to hear it either. You're like, because what do? We always say, well, God, if that's the future, I need you to change the future. Because I don't want that future, God. And so Peter, now, think of the roller coaster this emotional guy is on. One minute he's like, you're the special one, you're the great one. And the next year he's up in Jesus' grill. He's like, what are you talking about? He's with Jesus, I got to prepare everybody. I love them. They're going to be following me. So everybody, I want to get you ready for what's going to arrive in your life. And Peter says, Jesus, come here for a second, man. What are you doing? What are you thinking? You're not going to die. Are you crazy? You're the Messiah. I just told you. I mean, like, you walk on water. You once spoke to the weather and it obeyed you. Nobody's going to kill you. What are you thinking? Besides, have you seen what we got going here, Jesus? It's awesome. Have you seen these crowds? I mean, everywhere we go, we're like crowds and crowds. We're like rock stars. We roll into town and everybody comes out and see us. People like us, Jesus. We're popular, Jesus. Don't go all negative on us. Talking about death and dying. This is not the time to go negative. This is the time to fan the flames of the movement. Now get back over there and do something positive, like talk about prayer or something, Jesus. Like quit. Because Peter does not want to be prepared for the future. And here's the thing. Jesus isn't telling Peter, this is the future I've made and you're going to have it. He's just saying to him, listen, I know what's going to arrive in your life and I want you to be ready. It's like in the morning, Clarice says to me, it's going to be a hot day today. You better grab the sunscreen. She wants me to be ready. She's just a very simple thing. Just, I want to prepare you for what's going to arrive. It's not like she makes it a hot day. She just knows it's going to arrive. And there's things that are going to arrive in your life. And Jesus knows that they are going to arrive. He knows that those are on their way, and he's trying to prepare us. And Peter says, yeah, right. Not even. And you can't understand the preparation sometimes, but you should know one thing. You're being prepared for something that will arrive, for what lies ahead, because he knows that. And so listen what happens. Peter gets up in his grill, he rebukes him. And then look at this. But when Jesus turned and looked at his disciples, he rebukes Peter. So boom, boom, kind of throwing punches. He rebukes Peter. Get behind me, Satan. Oh, that's kind of strong language. Get behind me, Satan. Get behind me, he said. You do not have in mind the concerns of God, but merely human concerns. Now, this is a huge part of the story. So if you spaced out at all, come back to me here just for a few minutes, because this is ginormous. This is something you got to hear. What he's saying to Peter is, here's what he's saying. He said, you're not concerned about me, Peter. You're concerned about you. You're not concerned what's going to happen to me, Peter. You're concerned what's going to happen to you after what happens to me. You don't have God's concerns. You have your own. Has anybody ever had this happen? Someone comes and tells you, this is what's best for your life, and you know right underneath the only reason they're saying it is because it's what's best for them. Yeah, that one ever happened, and you know it. You're like, what? You just tell me that because that's what you want to see happen. And Peter, he says, Peter, don't try to hide from me. He goes, I know you. He's all you're doing right now is you're just trying to tell me what to do so you can have what you want. Which can happen when we follow, because we're in our moment of decision. It's like, God, no, that won't be good. God, that's not a good plan for everybody. And really what we're saying is not a good plan for me. And that's a pretty big thing. You know, you go from the one that says, you're the great one, and then he says, you're acting like a devil. Strong correction. And sometimes when you're really corrected firmly, it doesn't feel like love. You know, if you had it, like someone really corrects you firmly, when's the last time, like really firm correction, you're like, I don't feel like love to me. I thought God was loving. Firm correction sometimes doesn't, but I need it sometimes. When I was in the second grade, there was a student in our class had cerebral palsy. And it was pretty severe. Both legs were braced and had a difficult time speaking. He was in our class, though, and really hard time writing. Second grade now, sitting right next to me. And we were writing our alphabet, and we're learning to write words, you know, just little three-letter words. And man, would he struggle. I mean, I would watch him, and it just, like, I'd be through the alphabet three times, and he was like on D. And I just, it was so painful to watch him try to write his alphabet. And so one day I just said, hey, man, let me see your paper. And I just, like, copied his scrawl, and I just wrote all the way to the end of the alphabet. And he went right along with it. You know, the teacher's like, wow, look at you, you know, and he felt better, and I felt way better. And so we started doing that every single day. He would just slide his paper over to me, and I would just write on it. And he'd slide his homework over, and I would just write on it. This went on for day after day after day after day after day after day. And I just, and I rescued him. And then one day, I just got, you know how you get, like, have you ever noticed when you're doing something wrong, at first you're really, really sneaky, and then the more you get away with it, you just get nonchalant? I don't know if you're like that. Maybe you're like a really holy person, but I'm like that. So anyways, like, what, you know, so and that's what happened to me. I just got nonchalant. I said, hey, let me see your paper, dude. You know, and I just started writing it. And the teacher had come up from behind me, and I didn't know it. And she stopped, and she put her hand down on the paper, and she said in front of the whole class, you're not helping him. It was just like this moment in this story. Man, I was embarrassed as a second grader. I was conflicted. I was like, yes, I am helping him, man. You haven't seen him in tears trying to write his alphabet, and I am helping him, and you're mean. Because it was totally embarrassing, and everybody heard it, and I just thought that she could, you know, how could you do this to me? And she was right. I wasn't helping him. The best thing for him, it wasn't like that was going to heal him. He was going to have to live in the same world he was living in, and he was going to have to struggle, and he was going to have to used to struggle, and he was going to have to get used to being behind. And everything that he was going on that I rescued him from was not helping him. And I really needed firm correction because I was locked in my own ideas of what love looked like, and it wasn't love. And sometimes when you take a step and you're in a moment of decision, you're following Jesus, it's embarrassing, and it chucks you, and you're like, whoa. But Peter needed it because he's thinking, wow, this is like, and Jesus just stops him. Just stops him. Now, please, if Jesus is in a place where he's correcting you right now, can you just sort of push it all aside for a moment? Because you know, many times in my life, I've looked back. Many times the Spirit of God has reminded me and said, remember that? You're doing that again. My tendency is, because I don't like the pain of seeing someone else's struggle, my tendency is to rescue them. And it doesn't rescue them, it hurts them. And I'm not proud to admit it's actually about me. Back in second grade, I couldn't stand the pain. And so this in this story right here, this is what Jesus does. He comes right out and he says, and let's keep going. So he says, then he called the crowd to him along with his disciples and said, whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. For whoever wants to save their life will lose it, but whoever loses their life for me and for the gospel will save it. So really big correction. So think about it now. Now a scene is caused. I remember in second grade, it was like a scene. Like, you know, everybody's looking. Ooh, he's in big trouble, and he's embarrassed, and I'm embarrassed. And so that's what's going on here now. It's like the whole place is just like, whoa, did you hear what he said to him? It's like, wow, I didn't even know Jesus would talk like that to someone. He's like, did you hear that? You know, and he's got everybody's attention. And so Jesus decides, I want everyone to have a moment to decide. Because he knows from time to time we're desperate for a moment. We need a moment. We sail along, sail along, sail along, and we have to have a moment. The greatest gift is a moment to decide. He says, I'm going to give everybody a moment. And here's what he says. He said, if you're going to follow me, at some point you're going to be at that fork in the road, and you're going to have to decide, am I saying yes to Jesus or not? And if you're going to say yes to Jesus, here's what he's saying. If you're going to follow Jesus, if you're going to go his direction, then you'll have to deny yourself. Because what he wants for my life and what I want for my life and where he's leading me, the only way I'm going to say yes to him is I'm going to have to deny myself. I'm not going to be able to go both directions. If I'm going to say yes, then it means I'm going to say no to me. Now, don't make it a religious thing. We've all denied ourselves. At the end of the dinner, they come by and they say, hey, who'd like dessert? And you're like, oh, I want dessert. And you're like, oh, no, I better take a pass. You know, you deny yourself. You're out with all the guys, and they come by, and they say, hey, you know, like, who needs another beer? You want another beer? You're like, oh, I want another beer. And then you're like, no. I've had two already. I have to drive. You deny yourself. And that's what Jesus is saying. You're going to be in your moment. It's the fork of the road. And if you're going to say yes to him, you will have to deny yourself. Because listen, this is important. Listen, there will always be a conflict of interest at some point for what Jesus wants for my life and what I want for my life. If I'm going to go with him, I'll have to deny myself. And it gets worse. He uses the analogy of a cross. Well, they're probably thinking, deny myself. I don't even like doing that with dessert. And then it even gets worse. He said, it's going to be like a cross. Now think now. We think of cross. We think of like a wrapper with a bunch of jewelry and a big cross on. Or, you know, if we think of a little piece of jewelry, or we think of like a movie. Maybe you've seen a movie and there's some people dying on the cross, but there's music and it's kind of muted and it's all kind of faded in and it doesn't really look so bad. But these people here, they would have been very familiar with a specific cross, the Roman cross. Rome ruled Israel at this time, and many people died on the cross. They used to line the roads into the cities with these crosses, with people that were suffering and being tortured on these crosses, because it was Rome's way of saying, we're in charge. So they had seen many people die on the cross. So when Jesus says cross, they're probably thinking, gosh, you know, it's been really fun following you and all. I mean, it was so cool, you know, when you fed all those people and, you know, that guy got his eyesight back and that was awesome. And you healed my mother-in-law. I was kind of conflicted about that, but it was a miracle anyway, so I'm going to go with it. But you know, now you're talking deny myself and it's going to look like a cross. Have you seen a cross? They're very public, by the way. When you follow Jesus, it'll be very public and people will know. I'm like, what are you doing that for? Because I'm following Jesus. Are you crazy? Everybody has sex. I was talking to someone recently about that, and they were like, what? I remember I was with this couple and they wanted to get married, and they were in the church, and so we sat down and we started talking, and he was a pretty good old boy, and I said, well, you know, tell me about you guys, what's your physical life like and everything. And he just finds it, you know, and I said, well, listen. I said, you know, God's way is you save that for marriage and you don't have sex until you get married. And I remember he looked at me, he goes, are you crazy? And I said, well, it probably seems crazy. Sometimes you make a decision, it gets very, very public. And I'm not trying to step on anybody's toes and talk about sex, but I am trying to say this. At some point to follow Jesus, you may have to make a decision, and it's really super public, like a cross. They didn't put the crosses out somewhere nobody could see them, so nobody knew the torture was going on. They put them where everybody could see. And sometimes to follow Jesus, when you follow, moment of decision, and everybody's watching, and if you're going to say yes to Jesus, people are going to see you say yes to Jesus. You can only stay under the radar and be a secret agent Christian so long. At some point, people are going to know if you decide to follow. It's painful, too. I mean, dying on the cross, I'm not going to get into description because some would probably have to leave. It's so grotesque, but very, very painful. It's torture. It was a form of torture. And here's the other thing, and this is important. Please get this. It seems so final. Like when someone that you loved was dying on the cross, you know it's over. It's done. This is it for them. It is final. And when you're in your moment of decision, and you know you have to deny yourself, this is what Jesus is saying. He said, it's going to feel like so crazy awkward for people to know, and it's going to be painful, and it's going to seem so final. It's like, if I follow Jesus and do this, it's everything I wanted is over. It's so final. That's the cross they'd be thinking about. That's the Roman cross. It's torture. But listen, if you're going to understand this, you have to understand it in the light of a different cross, not the Roman cross, the cross of Christ. That's a different cross. That cross was not final. See, the cross of Christ, when everybody thought it's so final, it wasn't final. The Roman cross, is just about torture. If what Jesus is saying here is it's going to be the Roman cross, then denying yourself is just torture, period, and it ends in death. But the Roman cross ended in resurrection, life. Jesus is talking about a different cross, and here's what he's saying. Listen now. He's saying, yeah, it's going to be weird, and it's going to hurt, and it's going to seem like it's over, it's final. But listen, my cross doesn't cause death. My cross causes life. In your moment of decision, it's going to be hell. It's going to feel like death. You're going to wonder who's watching and how could I handle this pain and how could I ever go this way? It just lasts too long. You're going to be in all that. And he's saying, yeah, it's going to feel like all of that. But if you move through it, whoever loses their life will save their life. And the only way you know is to get to the other side. Resurrection. Are you standing in any sort of a moment right now and you're going, is he reading my, how does he know that it feels that way? Well, this is what Jesus is saying in the Bible. Let's keep reading. This is interesting. Next, he says, what good is it for someone to gain the whole world yet forfeit their soul? Or what can anyone give in exchange for their soul? So here's what he says. He knows where everybody's at. He says, listen, I know you're ready to bounce on me. Nobody's going to stay. You're leaving. But before you leave, let's play a game. Yeah, I want to play a game. Let's play a game, and let's play that in this game, you decide not to follow me. Let's just play it forward a little bit. You decide not to follow me. So here we are. We're all here, and you say, nah, I'm not doing it. Too much like a cross. I'm not following. And he says, so let's play that game, and let's say that when you play this game, you decide I'm not following, you get everything you want. I work downtown in Salt Lake City, and a certain type of people down there. A lot of them are angry. I meet people that are indifferent, and they're angry, and they're really angry at the church. They're just so angry at something to do with the church, and they have this sort of life that they've constructed. It's like they just want to find the right person, you know, get a Subaru and buy a dog. I mean, that's like their whole life, you know. And then when they get that life, and I meet them, they get that life. Here's what Jesus is saying. He said, what if you tell me no, and you get the life that you want, and it's not enough? What then? Or how about the people that go to church, and they're really, really super religious, and, you know, they get the boob jobs and tooth jobs and all the different things they do, and their body looks great, and they get the perfect little wife and the 27,000 kids and the big house and 6 minivans, and they get the job, and they're just like really, really super religious, and they're just like perfect, and everybody at church thinks they're awesome, and everything's at work, they're awesome, and it's just like they pulled it off. They're Mr. and Mrs. Religion, and it's not enough. Or some people walk away from the church. So they get the tattoo, and they dress how they want to, and they drink how they want to, and they have the relationship that they want to, and they just tear it up. They just like, oh, now I get to do what I really want to do. And then they find out down the road a little ways, what if it is not enough? That's what he's saying. He's saying, now just want, before you go, let's play it forward. Before you choose not to follow me, because what if you pull it off and you get the life that you think that you want and it's not enough? What then? And then this last part is just awesome how he ends it, the great communicator. If anyone is ashamed of me and my words in this adulterous and sinful generation, talking about us, the Son of Man, Jesus, will be ashamed of them when he comes in his Father's glory with the holy angels. So here's how Jesus ends it. He says, listen, he says, here's the one thing I can promise you. If you follow me, you'll never be ashamed. If you follow me, you won't have shame. And I've dealt with lots of different types of shame, personally. I'm not proud of it, but I'll just put myself out there. I've dealt with shame because of things I've done to other people. I've dealt with shame because of things that people have done to me. And maybe the one that is the hardest to pry out of my soul is the shame that I deal with because I didn't deny myself. I was in my moment of decision, and I just said, no, I'm going to do it my way. And so I do it my way, and then it blows up in my face. And people get hurt, and I get hurt, and it all starts in my moment of decision when I decide, no, I'm choosing me. That's some difficult shame. And Jesus is saying, this is the one thing I can tell you. if you'll follow me, you'll be free from shame. Do you know that if that was the only benefit of being with Jesus is you were free from shame, how many people do you know at so many levels of their life, they are ashamed? I mean, if Jesus, all he did, Jesus just set up a shop somewhere and he said, listen, don't worry about the forgiveness of sins and heaven over here and miracles and all the love and acceptance. Let's not even talk about that. All I'm telling you, none of that stuff, you don't get any of it. But here's the one thing you'll get. You'll be free from shame. It would be worth it to follow him. And I can tell you this. In the many, 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 many times that I've stood in the moment of decision, and I have decided to follow, I have never been ashamed. And in the times that I have decided not to follow, then yep, I've had them. Where I just said no to him. I've always been ashamed. In the moment of decision. And so here's a couple things right in your notes, just a couple takeaways to take home. There will be a conflict of interest. There will be a conflict of interest. There's going to be a conflict of interest. When you stand at, now listen, when you stand at the fork in the road, when you are in your moment, and you'll know when you are, there will be a conflict of interest. What Jesus wants for your life and what you want for your life will not be the same. And you'll have to decide. Am I following? And you'll have to decide. You have to say to yourself, well, I can't go there. I shouldn't return that phone call. I shouldn't get into this relationship. I should do this. I mean, you'll know what it is. There'll be a conflict. And in that conflict, it will probably feel like a cross. It'll be your moment to decide. Because there will be conflicts of interest between you and the Lord. And then the second thing here is there will be a cross. And remember, that's public. And for some of you, it probably is time for you to let it leak out that some of the reasons you make your decisions is because you follow Jesus. And it will be painful. And it will feel final. But it's not the Roman cross. It's not just torture. It's the cross of Christ. And there's a resurrection on the other side. The cross of Christ does not end in death. Something in me doesn't die. Something in me actually comes alive. And the bottom line is your choice will be worth it. Now, some today you might be thinking, when is that going to happen? Well, you'll know, and it's going to arrive on you soon. Maybe not today. You don't think that's where you're at. But at some point, and it's on its way, at some point you're going to be at the fork of the road, and it's going to be a moment of decision for you. Am I going to follow Jesus? Am I saying yes to Jesus, or will I not say yes to Jesus? It'll be your moment of decision. It's going to arrive into your life. And some are in that moment of decision right now. There's something going on with you, and you're in a moment of decision, and you're right there. Am I saying yes to Jesus? It'll be worth it. There's a large crowd here gathered with him. And for the ones that left, do you know what happened to the ones that left? I don't. We never hear about them. We don't know what happened to those people. But the ones that stayed and followed are the reasons we're sitting in this room right now. It will be worth it.